The 1911 is one of the most iconic firearms in history. Designed by John Browning, the 1911 was the standard-issue sidearm of the U.S. military from 1911 to 1985. While Colt produced the original, almost every major firearm company has produced its own version. It's wildly revered for its reliability, crisp trigger, and is still a favorite for all types of shooters. Whether you're looking to buy or build a 1911 and just about everything for guns, log on to MidwayUSA.com. Knives, machetes, saws, and shears, multi-tools, shovels, swords, axes, spears, hatchets, and tomahawks. If it cuts, snips, slices, or chops, Midway USA has it. Find great gift ideas in our huge selection of pocket knives and other everyday carry folding knives. Make a statement or create a family legacy with one of our top-of-the-line hunting knives. We've got a great selection of manual and electric sharpeners, too. For just about everything for the outdoors, check out MidwayUSA.com.
Join Justin Townsend and the Harvesting Nature crew as they explore the world of cooking wild fish and game while sharing recipes, tips, tricks, and lessons learned from their pursuit of wild food. We sure hope you ate before the show, as you're going to leave hungry. This is the Wild Fish and Game Podcast.
Hey everybody, welcome back to Harvesting Nature's Wild Fish and Game Podcast. You got your host here, Justin Townsend, and today we get a little crew chat once again, bring a different set of crew together today, and we're going to be talking a bit about ingredients, and not just any ingredients, like what are your go-to ingredients, I guess it would be what are our go-to ingredients inside the pantry, the fridge, whatever that we like to use with both wild fish and I would say arguably too like wild game. So we'll get that to in just a minute, but I'll give some quick updates on myself. So dealing with some snow here in Denver, so I haven't really been out and about as much. Looking forward to a possible ice fishing trip this weekend. So that's in the works. We'll see if it shakes out. It's going to be weather dependent. Have to drive up into the mountains, and if the snow's too bad, not going to make it up. But outside of that, the drawing seasons start to open, so a lot of people planning their fall hunts now as they start to put in applications across the western states, so that's pretty good. Say western states too. I got an email today of the Kentucky elk draw, of which I've never drawn, just like Pennsylvania. One day, though, one day I'll be there. until then, I'll just keep standing by to stand by. But outside that, let's see. Trying to think through some things. I'm working on a couple of recipes for the magazine. We've coming up here pretty soon. We'll be releasing that in March. If you pay attention to our social media channels, you'll see that we made that official announcement. So we've been talking with writers. We've been talking with photographers. We've been talking with advertisers, all those folks. So if you happen to be one of those folks, reach out, send us an email. whatscooking@harvestnature.com. We'd love to chat through some of the details of that if you're interested in writing, photographing, or advertising. We can chat for sure. With addition to that, we are doing some spice testing. We're testing some blends of spices that we've identified that we want to use for our first big game blend. So we're really trying to do some cool stuff with that. I want to talk about that in a minute after you kind of get a feel for everybody that's in the room and what we're doing, and I'll explain the process. It's also kind of a first herd for them too, so they're getting the spices, just not yet. So they're going to get to test those out as well. So we're really trying to prove, make the best spice that we can and use the true scientific method here. So we'll walk you through that in a little bit. But I will, without further ado, go over to Corey. Corey, what's going on in your neck of the woods?
It's been cold and snowy here. We've had a cold snap, so we've been in the single digits for the past, I don't know, a week or more. So it's probably got good ice on the lakes around. I just haven't gotten out yet to ice fish. So Just trying to take it easy the last few weeks.
Yeah, you seem like you're a bit under the weather.
A little bit. Another reason for that, my son is wrestling for the first time, and I'm a coach, so I was yelling a lot at his tournament.
Yeah, I saw those pictures.
I'm a little worse.
Nice. Anything else going on? Are you... what was I thinking? I haven't cracked into your dandelion jam yet. I'm waiting for like a really, really groggy, nasty day.
That prickly pear jam didn't last very long.
Yeah, mine was gone in 3 days.
One sitting.
Yeah,
I'm on jar number two of mine, but no, it was pretty good. I may have to write up the recipe for that and share it. We've talked about it, I think, a lot since everybody got it. They've mentioned it, and we talked about it last podcast too with the canning episode. So it was fun to make and pretty easy. You don't have to have a pressure canner for it. The water bath method works. If you want to learn about that, go back one and listen to our canning episode. But, yeah, sorry, Corey. Continue on. Anything else you got?
No. Just excited for the magazine to come out and people to subscribe to that. So.
Yeah, should be exciting. I'm excited with the print on demand and the digital. So our main focus will be kind of the digital. And then for those that really like to hold paper in their hands, like me, I like to read paper. So I will order that. But the cool thing is that our advertisements in there, you'll be able to click and it'll take you to the website. So it's pretty unique functionality there.
Someone did ask a question on how the print on demand works. So it might be a good idea to explain it.
Yeah. I answered the question on social media, so if you feel like reading the answer, go there and look at that post. But really what will happen is the same place that you are able to read the digital version, you can order a print-on-demand copy. And so print-on-demand, basically, we're not going to hold a bunch of stock. We're not going to, as soon as it's released, ship out to everyone. The main subscription part of it will be the digital part. And then if you're like, oh man, I really like this, like I want to read it, I want to put it on my coffee table, I want to put it in my bathroom, like whatever, you'll have a button that you can just literally click print, and it'll be a different price, a more expensive price, because then instead of just using the waves of signals.
The electrons.
Yeah, the electrons in the world, the waves of signals to carry the data from the servers to your phone. Instead, it'll be printed at a printing house and then mailed to you shortly thereafter. So that's kind of what we want to do. That way, we're not printing a bunch of copies. One, it saves us money. Two, we're not just printing a bunch of copies and wasting paper. So people that want to buy them can. People that don't, just want to read it online, can read it online, and people that don't want to read it at all, well, they're just wrong. So, okay, Colin, what you got?
Hey, everybody, this is Colin. Really happy with the feedback that we've got so far for the magazine. Just, I guess I'll plug it as well. A lot of really good comments on our social media, people looking forward to it. We're also very excited about it, as you can tell. So, yeah, looking forward to seeing what comes out of that. I made a Mississippi roast out of some goose gizzards that I have collected over the past year. So I think some of them were from some larger westerns it would have been Western Canada geese last year and then from some cackling geese this year. What's up?
Question.
Yeah.
So, goose livers, right?
Gizzards.
Goose liver. goose gizzards.
Yeah.
So when people think of gizzards, I think probably what most commonly pops in their head is like chicken gizzards, right? Which are, you know, roughly size of a golf ball, maybe smaller.
Yep.
What are we looking at when we look at a goose gizzard?
It's about the same diameter as a baseball, but like oval shaped. It's like oblong. But it's big. I mean, you could throw it and hurt somebody with it if it was frozen.
All right, noted.
It's hefty. I think I ended up using six large ones and two smaller ones in this recipe.
Okay.
And then I just diced them up I rinsed them out and got all like the stuff they were eating out of it, or a lot of that out of there, and then diced them up so it looks like there's almost like a V in the middle of it, if you haven't seen a gizzard before. And that's where all the what they're eating goes into. So you kind of cut out that V and you're left with two halves, and trim a little bit of the extra off, maybe some silver skin type stuff, and super tender meat, and that's what I used.
Nice.
So, put that into a crock pot, slow cooker, dump some half a stick of butter in there, some pepperoncini juice with pepperoncinis, and then I used ranch powder for this one. And I left it on there for 7 hours, which is actually a little bit too long. I think I could have taken it off in six. Some pieces were a little dry. And then I made rice and put it over rice the whole point behind this recipe was to cut down on some of the marshy, briny flavor that waterfowl get up here, because we're so close to the coast, they're going to get a lot of that brackish seawater. Even if they're passing through and they land here for a day, they're still going to absorb that flavor. So, Justin, you've had the jerky, and you know the flavor that I'm talking about. It's a little muddy. I wouldn't call it gamey because it's not gaminess. It's muddy. It's earthy tasting. But the pepperoncini acid and I think the butter and the ranch especially cut down on that flavor. And then I put it over rice also that cut it down even further. And I'm actually going to heat them up, the last of it that I have, and put it on some tacos tonight too with some coleslaw. So kind of a mix of stuff. It's really good for tacos if you're in for some different flavors. It turned out really well. That's something I would definitely do again with goose or any kind of waterfowl from up here.
Huh. Yeah. I like it. I like the Mississippi roast. So I did one a while back. We have a video, a YouTube video, and an article with a recipe on it. So it doesn't use the powder packets. I think I talked about this in the Flintlock episode with Corey. But then when I was visiting Corey, you guys made one while we were there, and we ate it as sandwiches, which was pretty phenomenal.
Oh,
and then, I made one this last weekend, and I made mashed potatoes, and we served it over mashed potatoes. And we did that. So Saturday night I made it for dinner, we did it over mashed potatoes. Sunday morning, brunchish time, I made omelets with the meat. And then I did ramen on Monday and added the shredded beef the shredded meat into the ramen. And so I ate it that way too. And then I just finished the last of it yesterday. So
I bet it'd be great on a Benedict, on like an English muffin with a poached egg on top.
Yeah. It's pretty good. I like it because it's so tangy and flavorful. It's just like, it's really good.
Yeah, it turned out really well. I'm happy with it. I mean, I love Mississippi roast. And actually, if I was going to do it again, I'd probably do it with actual ranch dressing, not the powder, just to keep it moist a little bit more, keep it from drying out. Maybe that extra moisture from the actual ranch dressing, not the powder.
I think probably what you're running to with like the gizzards is, even though it's a muscle and it's a tough muscle, it's very lean.
Oh, like super, there's zero fat on it. Yeah.
So that's going to be it. So even like when you do venison roast or things like that, like there's still some liquid that kind of cooks off of it. So that's adding to it. And then, so the recipe I have, really the only liquid is I use some of the brine from the pepperoncinis, and I pour that in there, and then I saute onions in butter, and that's really the only liquid. Everything else just kind of comes off the roast. So you're really just braising it in the crock pot. So
I also left out a big part. I marinated the gizzard meat in buttermilk overnight, which is has been recommended to me multiple times for the waterfowl out here. I think that helps with the flavor and cutting down on that muddiness too. But I also think it helps with the leftover flavor. I mean, buttermilk is delicious. So I think it helped with the leftover flavor coming off out of the crock pot.
Yeah, I like it. All right, cool. Let's talk a little bit about the spice testing process. So for those that don't know, we're going to be releasing our own blend of spices throughout this year. And our first one, we're going to be doing a big game. So we've been testing some combinations of blends. And I tested some the other day. So I tested 4 different ones. And then I subsequently packaged up small samples and sent to Corey, Colin, Ryan, Emily, Casey, and Ben. And so what we're doing is I created a matrix. You guys haven't seen it yet because you haven't got the package. You will soon. But it's essentially like it has an abbreviated name of the spice blend in a column, a vertical column, and then a horizontal row, it's got the meat type, right? So I did like bear, elk, white-tailed deer, mule deer, other types of deer. What else did I do? Moose. Somebody had moose. I put moose on there. I even included, because I had extra space on the page, the waterfowl. So like light geese, which would be like your snow geese, dark geese, like your Canadian geese, diver ducks, and dabbler ducks. So you can literally, you have the whole list there, and the way I tested it was I took antelope out, so that's on the list too, that's at the top. I took antelope steak out, I took one steak out, and I cut it into quarters, so they're about 2-inch to 4-inch pieces each, and I used a teaspoon of oil, just a little bit of neutral oil. I used safflower, and I put that on each piece, and then I put each seasoning on it, noting which one it was, so 1 through 4. And then I rubbed it so that it coated it pretty well. Brought my pan up to medium-high heat, threw it on there, seared each side, like medium-rare, and then pulled it off, let it rest for 5 minutes, and then I cut and sliced it. Both my daughter and I taste-tested it. And then we took the same sheet that you guys have, and we rank ordered them 1 through 4 for the antelope. And so then what you guys will end up doing once it gets to you is whatever game meat you have, big game meat and waterfowl, since I threw that on the thing too, is you can use to rank order it, and then we'll compile all that together and we'll say, boom, this is our favorite blend. So I don't know. What do you think? True scientific process?
Yeah, I think it measures up to the scientific method.
Yeah, that's good to me.
Yeah. Oh, and I split the elk, too. I did Rocky Mountain elk, and I know, Colin, you have some Roosevelt elk, so.
Yeah, that's a whole other taste test we can get into, but I eventually like to experiment with is tasting if there's any difference between Rocky Mountain or Roosevelt elk, and then deer species as well, but.
We you know what, we should do that when we all get together this year. We should all bring a pack of like whatever.
Yeah.
And then we could also buy a pack of like the farm raised stuff, and then we'll just do a taste test, and we could do like a live podcast recording.
Yeah. A blind taste testing.
Yeah.
That'd be fun.
I think it'd be super super fun. So that's our spice testing process. So keep an eye out. We're probably gonna announce the first blend for sale either next month or the first couple weeks of March. So keep an eye out for that. We'll be good to go. We'll subsequently follow that up with probably an upland bird blend, which will include like turkey, pheasant, dove, all those. We're going to create a blend close to that, or close to satisfying all those upland bird species. So be just in time for spring turkey. So boom.
Midway USA brand product designers have one straightforward goal: develop high-quality, technically sound products and deliver them to customers at reasonable prices. If you are immersed in the shooting sports industry and pay close attention to every single detail, you know our products are built right and stand up to everyday use. Who has shooting mats and range bag systems to hunting clothing and just about everything for the outdoors? Log on and shop 24/7 with super fast shipping MidwayUSA.com.
Fishing like a local isn't just about catching fish. It's about connecting with the environment and the people who call it home. It's about hearing the stories and traditions that have been passed down for generations and sharing unforgettable moments with the people you meet along the way. Fishing like a local is having an experience that stays with you forever. And with Fishing Booker, you can experience it too, no matter where you are. Discover your next adventure on Fishing Booker.
All right, let's talk about our topic tonight. And so that, I mentioned earlier, is going to be go-to. And so really what we're going to do is we're going to kind of move around between us three, and we have each five ingredients which we feel are like really useful in the kitchen. And so one person will identify what their ingredients is, and the other people will tear it apart. No, I'm just kidding. We're not going to tear it apart. We'll just discuss this as to why and chat through. And, you know, then in the end we may recap and say, like, oh, yeah, that was my favorite, or this was my favorite, you know, whatever that looks like. So if you feel like I'm totally crazy out of left field, let me know, and I'm going to convince you otherwise. So I think probably the way to look at this is, like, what is your go-to? What is something that you use pretty commonly throughout all your wild food cooking? So that includes game and fish. That is really beneficial in creating flavor and enhancing the dish. Remember, we're not trying to cover up flavors. We're not trying to mask flavors. We're trying to enhance the flavors and make the meal more enjoyable. So with mine, my number one probably like go-to ingredient are eggs. And you're like, what? I would be like, what? So let me break it down for you. I use eggs in a lot of ways, right? So eggs are great alone for like breakfast items. So if I'm going to make, let's say, on the website, we've got a huevos rancheros recipe, which is phenomenal. Guess what goes right on top of huevos rancheros? Huevos, also known as eggs in English. So,
a little Spanish lesson there.
Yeah. So, yeah, so that goes right on top. I like it over easy with all my breakfast stuff. I've done wild game breakfast burritos. We've got, like, pretty much anything I could put an egg on. The meatier recipe, the shit on a shingle, there's an egg on that one.
Locomoco.
I just really like it. Huh?
Locomoco.
Locomoco? Yeah. Eggs on that was a good one. I see a lot of people now that are doing like bacon variations of game stuff like that. You would pair eggs with that. Sausages for breakfast, like all those things. I think that it's pretty relevant for eggs in the breakfast realm. But if you step outside of the breakfast realm, I like to use eggs as a binder for fish. When I fry fish, I like to use the egg as the binder. And I don't just use egg, though. It's usually like egg and milk and yellow mustard and the spices. Because I like to season the fish, the liquid, which would be like your milk wash, and then I'll also season the batter as well. And so all those things are seasoned, so you get lots of flavor no matter where you're biting on the piece of fish. But the whether you're doing like a flour, egg wash, cornmeal, or you're doing egg wash, cornmeal, or like whatever order you are creating your batter for the fish, eggs are a great binder, and that helps stick your flour or cornmeal or whatever powder you're using to the fish itself. So that's why eggs rank order up in that. The last one, also used as a binder, because I don't mix fat with my ground game, I oftentimes will use egg as a binder inside my ground meat. And that helps hold the patties together. Otherwise, they just get kind of like soft and squishy and sometimes crumbly, but like that egg really helps bind it together. So I'll whisk up an egg, usually like one egg per 1 pound of ground meat, throw that in there. It lets me make meatballs. It lets me make hamburger patties. That if you're making meatloaf, it really firms up the meatloaf so you can get nice slices. If it's still too runny, you can add breadcrumbs in there. But it's still all like, oh, it just really works. So, eggs are my number one. Who wants to go next?
I'll take it. I'm going to pounce right off of your egg ingredient there and say breadcrumbs, because not only do I use eggs as a binding material for meatballs, meatloaf, other ground meat, but breadcrumbs also gives it that extra kind of like packing material, as you want to call it, and a little bit of an extra crunch in there when you go for meatloaf and meatballs and stuff. So breadcrumbs, immediately. I use them a lot. I love meatloaf, love meatballs. So anything with those, I'm tossing breadcrumbs in there also. Just something that I've always done. My next one is going to be wine.
Whoa, we're doing one at a time. Slow down.
Oh, okay. I'm getting ahead of myself. Jeez. Yeah. All right, breadcrumbs. That's it. specifically panko breadcrumbs. Yeah.
Panko?
Yeah.
You're not an Italian breadcrumbs guy?
No, I like the larger kernel size of the panko ones. They're like kind of larger and popped out more. Yeah.
Nice. Okay. I was working on a recipe actually last night, and I'll go ahead and tell you the recipe now, and then you guys can stand by for follow-up. But, you know, Colin, you'll be familiar with this. Corey, I don't know. You may or may not. Croquettes. Like, so Cuban croquettes have, like, ham and potato, and then you roll them in flour and egg wash and then breadcrumbs, and then you fry them. And they're about the size of, like, you took a cigar and you cut it, you know, into quarters or whatever, depending on the size of the cigar. But they're rolled like that, and they're just, like, it's a good little snack food. I had leftover mashed potatoes from this weekend, so I worked on making some croquettes last night, and I used eggs, ground venison, and cheese, and panko.
I have a croquette story. Well, sort of a story.
Let's hear it.
I did a deployment on a Dutch naval ship at some point, and they love croquettes, but they're not like, they have good croquettes and they have bad croquettes. Like you can get good chicken tenders in the store, you can get bad chicken tenders. Well, it's the same thing. So the good croquettes were good. They had like visible chunks of meat, like you could see they were kind of like homemade almost, and they were pretty good. But the bad croquettes are just like blended like meat paste with like potatoes. Not good, but they love them. They were always saying, like, oh, it's a nice Dutch treat and everything. But, yeah, it was, like, almost every meal you can get a croquette on the side. So that's what I think of when I hear croquettes. But I do also – I yearn for the good croquettes. Maybe you'll have to come up with a recipe and make some good croquettes. Anyway.
Yeah. Yeah, yeah. Croquettes are so good. Sent my daughter to school with them today.
Don't deploy on a Dutch ship.
No. Noted. All right, Corey, you're up next. What's your number one?
One thing that I found that I always have in my pantry now, and started in the last few years, and I use it often, are chipotle peppers and adobo sauce. You can get them at the store, a can of them at the store for less than a buck. So I always grab a handful every time we grocery shop or whatever. And you can do a lot with them. I just made barbacoa this week, so you can throw a bunch in there.
Okay.
The Mississippi roast. One time we were making it, we didn't have pepperoncinis and didn't want to run to the store, so we just threw chipotles in there. And it came out great. A little bit, you know, obviously different flavor, but still same principle. I like a little heat on my tacos, chop them up, put them on that, or a salad, put them on top of a burger. So.
And so you, too, have a world-famous squirrel dip, right? It's got chipotle peppers in it, too.
Yep. Yep. So yeah, they're
world famous.
Depending on how hot you want, you throw, you know, 2, 4, 6 of those in there. If the kids are eating it, it's 2-ish. If it's just going to be me, it's a few more.
That's what makes it world famous, is the kids will eat it.
Right.
Gotcha.
But no, it's the we have that recipe too out.
Yep.
Let's see. I'm trying to think Chipotle peppers. I've used in a multitude of things just throughout time, I think. I've used, and when you first said chipotle peppers, it made me think about the dried peppers. You know, you can get those at the store and like the, usually on like the end cap or wherever the other Latin American spices are, and they'll have like different dried chilies. That's kind of what my mind went to, and I was like, oh yeah, the huevos rancheros, you use those. But I think you can sub in those, the canned chipotle peppers too. Is that what you're talking about, right?
Yeah.
It's like the canned peppers in adobo sauce.
Yep.
Yep.
And like, so you can, typically I only use like a couple at a time.
Mm-hmm.
And there's a bunch, even the little cans, there's a bunch in there. So I'll just put them in a container, put them in the fridge, and they'll last for a while. And, you know, just use one or two, you know, here and there, and work my way through the can. But even still, the cans are like 89 cents or something like that. So they're nice thing to grab at the store when you're there.
I remember my last cooking job, we came up with it was at a taco place, and a very nice taco place called Mellow Ventures, Key West. If you're there, go visit. Sorry, Mellow Cafe. Mellow Cafe and Mellow Ventures are used pretty synonymously, but
great tacos.
We decided to create a chipotle sour cream, and so we made that, and I made it the first few batches, and I taught the cooks how to make it, and then they were making it, and then I came in one day, and they were like, hey chef, like these plates keep coming back with this chipotle sour cream in it. And I was like, well, what do you mean? They're like, I don't know what it is, people are saying it's too spicy. I was like, what do you mean it's too spicy? Like, we've been serving this for weeks. Like, there's no problem. And then I was like, let me see. Let's taste the sauce. So I go and I taste the sauce. And I was like, holy smokes. I was like, this is so spicy. I was like, what did you guys do? Like, walk me through the recipe as you made it. They're like, oh, you know, we put the sour cream in, we put the seasoning, we put this, and we put one of these adobos in. And I look at him and I was like, one adobo? As in, like, one pepper, right? He's like, no, like, one can. We just dumped the whole can in there. I was like, oh, my gosh. So,
I've made that mistake before. I was doing a Hank Shaw recipe or something, and it says, you know, 2 to 4 peppers, and I read it as 2 to 4 cans. And I put 2 cans in there, and it was a little spicy.
I bet. Yeah. All right. So I'll go back. I'll go back around. So my number two ingredient, salt. And before you call me basic, I will tell you that, one, salt is in everything that you eat, most likely in some form, unless you're not a salty person. But that's okay. But I'm not talking necessarily about processed foods or packaged foods or things like that. I like to use salt in various ways. I like to use salt in preservation. So keeping your foods, whether you're preparing it for curing, whether you're drying it, whether you are adding it to a vinegar base, where you are brining, where you're doing all these things. So salt plays a very crucial role in that, and you have different types of salt. You know, you've got sea salt, you've got kosher salt, you've got iodized salt, you've got pink curing salts, you've got all these different types of salts that serve their different purposes. But in the culinary world, they're used very much a lot of different ways. Probably the most common way is like people use kosher salt or sea salt or Himalayan pink salt or Hawaiian salt or whatever, applewood smoked salt. You're using these as flavor enhancers, so they're spices, right? So salt has the ability to take whatever you want to grow the flavor of, and it does that. So it increases your body's ability to detect the flavors and things. So it's an enhancer. So for that, I say that salt is probably more used than eggs in about all of my recipes.
Have you ever used a salt block to cook?
No, but I've heard of it.
I got one as a Christmas gift. I think it was actually a White Elephant Christmas party a few years ago, and used it. And it was cool. I couldn't tell, like, a noticeable difference in flavor, per se, but it was cool to cook on because, it's like this, it's basically replacing the cooking surface with this block of salt. And I think I cooked a couple of fillets of fish on it and some veggies, and it turned out pretty awesome. But I mean, it's the same thing. It just absorbs salt straight off the actual block.
You know what I want to do with salt this year? And I'm going to do it probably in the summer. Salt baked fish. You guys ever seen that?
Is it like completely encrusted?
Yep. Yeah, you completely, like, you put the fish in, you put a layer of salt down, you put the fish in there, and then you completely cover it with salt, and then you bake it. And then you literally, like, take the salt away from it as you, once it's cooked. But it just seems like it's such a cool, way. I don't know. Corey, do you have a salt story?
I used too much salt one time and ruined my spicy squirrel.
I remember that. You called me. You're like, how do I fix this? I was like, make more of it with no salt.
Yeah, I was upset. I wasn't paying attention. I think I opened the wrong side of the salt shaker, the pour instead of the shaker part.
Mm-hmm.
It was like, ruined it.
But
anyway.
Yeah, I think salt plays a pretty crucial role in most kitchens. I would definitely say that. Grains of salt, you can do salt crusts, you can roast things in salt.
Brine things in salt.
Things in salt.
Dude,
I think brining,
too.
Yeah, dry brines or wet brines work pretty well.
I like to do a dry brine for pastrami when I do that. I think it absorbs better. I don't know.
I could see that. All right, Colin, what do you got next?
All right, next up is red wine.
Ooh,
the best
red wine.
Yeah, exactly. Was it like UB40 or something? I forget. The best pot roast I ever made was with red wine, and I will never make a pot roast again without using red wine, or any kind of like mix of veggies and starch and meat together. I think it adds a really bold flavor. I think it enhances any meal like that. So I got a whole bunch of roasts and stuff, elk roasts, in my freezer right now, and I'm planning on using a significant amount of them with red wine.
Nice, yeah. I like the red wine, too, for, like, really hearty roasts, like you were talking about, because I think it really accentuates the flavor a lot.
Yeah.
I think we have who was it? Tori did a elk pot roast on the website. That one's pretty phenomenal. I'm trying to think other ways which you use rice. Oh, we have you know what I did? And this is an odd, like, off-the-wall thing with rice or with red wine. I did, like, drunken noodles, but with red wine and cooked the pasta in red wine. That was kind of cool, and then served it with like grilled steaks. So that recipe's up on the website too. So that's a really neat one. But I think that's a very classic classic way. You can go like beef bourguignon.
Yeah.
From France.
Which kind of,
yeah.
Which I haven't made, but I'm also planning on making some of that too.
Yeah, yeah. Do like a little elk bourguignon.
Yeah. The Julia Child way.
Yeah, yeah. Cord, you got any wine stories? With cooking,
no,
with cooking, not with drinking.
We don't use it too much. We usually just drink it.
Yeah, that's fair. I like it when the recipe calls for like half a cup of wine, and then you have to buy a whole bottle, and you're like, oh no, what am I going to do with the rest of the bottle?
I guess I'll just drink it.
Yep.
And then you end up pouring too much salt into your recipe, and you know,
yep.
What happens. So.
Yeah.
Too many salt and chipotle peppers.
Yeah.
All right, Corey, what do you got next?
One thing I've started using more of is like lard or tallow.
Ooh,
or like bacon fat. So when we cook bacon, we'll do it in the oven on like a sheet pan or whatever, cookie tray. And so it captures that, and I'll just put it in a ramekin and put it in the fridge, save it for later. But like you, when it calls for oil or something, I'll throw lard or tallow in there instead.
Mm-hmm.
Like with the barbacoa we just made, like one of the last, like if you're using it for tacos or something, the last step is, you know, kind of fry it in the frying pan with a little bit of oil, and I used bacon fat instead.
Ooh, yeah.
And I have, we have a local butcher, and it was like 99 cents a pound for lard, so I got 30 pounds of it. So
yes.
So it came in this like 1 foot by 1 foot by 1 foot cube, frozen block of lard, and I had to get my meat saw and cut it. But, like, it's lard, so it's slippery and slimy. It took forever to cut that thing into chunks so I could, you know, vacuum seal it and freeze it. But I plan to use that, you know, mix it in with some ground venison to make sausage and stuff. And I used some of that to do a goose leg confit, and that was some of the best goose that I've ever had. I filled up the, since I had so much lard, I just filled up the Dutch oven. I don't know, I had like 8 or 10 legs in there, and just a, you know, a ton of lard. So I had a lot of leftover stuff, so I can make, what all did we make? I made like, we did like goose leg tacos, I did like a frittata, that uses eggs.
Yeah.
Oh, there we go. Full circle.
I did like a goose leg stew. So, and this all had the lard. And so I'm going to use that to segue into my next thing.
Whoa.
Because it goes hand in hand, and we'll just go in reverse order.
Yeah, that's a good idea.
Okay. Yeah, you're the podcast producer, so go ahead.
So when I do,
I have one thing about lard or fat, though.
Okay, go ahead.
So we've been talking a lot about it lately on the podcast, right? Because if we recall, within probably the past year, we had a discussion on soaps from Wild Game Fats. We talked with Wade and Rachel from Elevated Wild. We had a whole episode on game fats and rendering game fats, which makes them usable for lard. So and we discussed so many recipes with them. I'm like you. I like to keep bacon grease, and I like to keep duck fat on hand, and I like to use those to finish things too, just like you said.
Your duck fat that you keep on hand, is that store bought, or are you getting enough ducks to render your own?
No, it's store bought right now. Yeah. So, but when I do get ducks, which is going to happen probably next year because it's lesser ducks now, but maybe goose fat if it's good.
The only geese I get are in the early season, so they're not all fatty.
Yeah, really.
And so there's not much to them. So I'm getting the breasts and legs and hearts out of them, but not much fat.
Well, hopefully you're also now saving gizzards to make Mississippi gizzard roasts. I don't even know what we would call that. We'll have to think of a crafty name for it. But outside of that, yeah, I don't know. We'll see how fatty the geese are going to be. I got some plans in the working, hopefully with our buddies from over at Infinite Outdoors. We talked about maybe doing some live stuff from the field, Colorado goose hunting. So we'll see if that comes. But all right. Back to you, Corey, for that next ingredient.
So my next thing is wild game stock and or braising liquid. So like when I did the goose confit, there was a ton of liquid left over, right? Pulled all the meat. Picked the meat from the bones, and there's, I strained the liquid, and there's just this ton of liquid, and there's so much flavor in that, and it's fat, so I save that, and so that, like, once it solidified, it was just like bacon grease almost, so I just used it like that, but it also applies to, like, the Mississippi roast, or any of the braising things that I do, so the other day, I did a big batch of pheasant. I braised down. I had four whole pheasants, and I breasted out and cooked the breast a different way. But I just put the rest of the carcass with the legs and thighs and wings still attached, and I braised them down. And I picked the meat, and we used the meat for three or four different recipes. But I kept the liquid. And my wife used some of that to make risotto, which we paired with the pheasant breasts.
Mm.
And then what I do is I have these little plastic jars.
Mm-hmm.
They're like canning jars, but they're plastic. So I'll put those in there. I'll put the braising liquid in there, throw it in the freezer, and let it freeze, and then pop it out of there and put it in a vac bag. So, like, when I need to braise something else, I'll just throw that in there. So it's just reusing that braising liquid over and over, and just accumulates all these flavors, and it just makes things very flavorful. And you're not dumping all that flavor down the drain. You just keep reusing it. And that's one thing I highly recommend anybody doing is if you make a roast, if you do any kind of braising, save that liquid and just keep reusing it. You carry those flavors on to the next thing.
Ooh, yeah. I think it's really good. Man, I have so many thoughts. I love making stock. Actually, so if you go to our cooking classes, our on-demand ones, not our virtual ones. So we have two different sets. So the on-demand ones, there's a smoky wild pork one that I did, and that stock came out really, really well. The class is only an hour long, so it's mainly kind of like the prep going into it, and then once you get the meat in the pot and get it simmering, you're good. But I always, unless I'm traveling and there's like CWD restrictions and stuff like that, I always try to save bones to bring back and roast and make stock with. I've done it with fish. I've done it with lobster. We have a good lobster stock recipe. I've done it with crabs. I've done it with shrimp. I take vegetable scraps and, like, throw those in the freezer, and then once my gallon bag's full, I'll make vegetable stock. Like, I love to use stock for pasta, for boiling pasta, for cooking rice, for, like, whatever I'm doing. If it calls for water, I generally add some sort of stock, and you'll see, like, the flavor's just so much better.
And I don't know if what I'm doing is technically stock, because, like, there's still bits and pieces. It's not that clear, transparent liquid.
So that's
like it's. I don't know if you could call it stock. A lot of times I just call it braising liquid when I label it and put it in the freezer.
Yeah.
But I think it does the same thing though. It has all that flavor to it.
So you're talking about like a consommé, which is like a very clear filtered stock, also kind of a soup. That's super clarified. That's what you're thinking about, like cooking liquids. So you can still have a stock that is has bits in it, but really are – sorry. So you get like consommé, you get stock, broth, and you get stock. And stock can have stuff in it. Broth, I think, needs to be clearer. And then consommé – I'm probably butchering the way I say it, but that's okay, is essentially you use some other extra medium to take out any bits of anything. So it's just literally straight liquid and flavor. And
I've tried that before with like a coffee filter,
yep.
And it takes forever, and I don't have the patience, so I'm like, it's good the way it is.
Well, I do three-part. When I make my stocks, I do three-part. I do almost like a screen mesh, so picture like on your window screen, like that same size. I run that through there first. That gets out your big bits, most of the smaller bits. And then I've got a tea filter. It's a metal-like tea strainer for drinking loose leaf tea. If you put it in a cup and then you put the loose leaf tea in there, pour your water in there, and then you lift it out after it's set, all the water drains out and the tea leaves come. That is fine enough that it will get most things. And if I want to get really detailed, I'll use, like you said, a cheesecloth, a kitchen towel, a coffee filter, or whatever to filter out the rest. But that does take a long time. But I at least go down to the tea strainer. So, and that, depending how long you're going to keep the stock on hand, will like help you. It won't continue to like the flavor evolve or bitter or sour from whatever ingredients you have in there. So,
I normally I keep it in the fridge for a couple days, and then after a couple days I'll throw it in the freezer days later. So,
and you use like you said, like almost like plastic canning jars.
Yeah. So that or just like a Tupperware thing, so I can freeze it in a shape, you know, and then pop that out of that and put it in a vac bag and vacuum seal it while it's still frozen.
That's a pretty good
idea.
That
way I can vacuum seal it, get it nice and airtight, and not use all my Tupperware in the freezer.
You know what I like to do? And this is probably the cook in me. You know the liter plastic containers that you get from like restaurants that you order soup in, and they'll be like the plastic ones that are tall and they've got like a plastic lid that fits on top. You get them like if you get Chinese food or Asian food, you order soup or pho at Vietnamese restaurants or whatever, you get that is like with your liquid in it. I like to put my stocks in that and then freeze it because those are, I mean, you're essentially just getting them reused and it's not taken away from your plasticware, glassware stock in the cabinets, and then they just kind of stack neatly in the freezer too. So that's an idea.
Time for my number three.
Time for your number three, since I got skipped.
Well,
no, we're going back to you.
Oh. You get to go twice.
Okay.
Olive oil is my next one. I know it's pretty basic. It's kind of up there with salt and pepper, but I use it for absolutely everything. Anything that needs like some kind of sauteing or like a nice sear before you put it in the slow cooker or braise it or anything, olive oil is a go-to. It's also just like...
Do you go crazy with like the very fancy olive oils? Go to the store with olive oils on tap?
Oh, no. I don't have any of those around me. I used to. In San Diego, there was like three places where you had, there were like olive oil.
Temecula Olive Oil Company?
Yeah, just like olive oil and like balsamic vinegar rooms where they have all these like flavor-infused ones. And they're good. I just never bought any of them. Like, what am I going to do with an orange and chili-fused olive oil? Like, I think I could use it for one thing, but I don't know. It's like I either got to buy all of them or none of them. I can taste the difference between really good olive oil and like cheaper stuff. But I just kind of go for like mid-range olive oil. And do you guys know one of the hidden secrets behind olive oil, buying quantities of olive oil? You should buy it in smaller bottles because as soon as it's exposed to oxygen, it starts to oxygenate. So larger bottles that you use over longer periods of time lose their flavor. I read it on the internet, so it's got to be true.
You're talking about larger bottle, plastic versus glass?
And any quantity or any type. It's just the amount, because the amount gets oxygen. It's like
oxidation.
Wine. If you leave wine open for too long, you know, it starts to lose some of its flavor. But with olive oil, it's even if you put the cap back on, it can happen to olive oil. So it's better to use it in smaller quantities, open smaller quantity bottles.
I have had really poor quality olive oil, and then I've had when my mom was stationed in Italy, they went to an olive place and pressed the olives like themselves and made their own oil, and they got to bring the bottles back, and she sent me several, and that one was really, really good. I don't know. There's so much, you know, there's like a lot of controversy around olive oil too. You didn't know that?
Is it similar to like some of the wine controversy? Authenticity?
Yep. You look at authenticity, and then now you've had over the years an emergence of U.S. Olive oil producers, and so now those U.S. olive oil producers are upset with the fact that the Italian and Spanish and Greek and European countries hold the predominant market still in the United States and are able to keep the price really high, but there's like a competition issue. So a lot of economics behind it, but it's just like, you know, you vote with your money in a way, so it's like, what do you want to support? But I think aside from that, I've kind of strayed away from olive oil except as like to finish with. So if I'm going to do like salads, or I'm going to make salad dressings, or, you know, infuse the olive oil with something as an extra spice. I really got on, I started cooking a long time ago with grapeseed oil. And I really like that. And then recently I've been doing some safflower oil. So I kind of go between those two because they have a higher smoke point, which means you can heat them higher before they start smoking, which means you can get things crispier.
Yeah, that's the downside of olive oil, is that it does not have a high smoke point, so you can't get really high heat sears on it.
So I will use that as a segue into my ingredient, clarified butter. So do you guys know what clarified butter is?
I've heard it, and I know we've talked about it before, but I always forget.
It's like you heat up butter and you wipe away the white foam, right?
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Yep. So you'll see it commonly referred to as ghee. So it is that part that you're removing is part of the lactic properties, similar to like dairy and milk and stuff that have that. So clarified butter could be considered dairy-free, but it's, I don't know. It's this weird status. Either way, once you remove those elements from it, it has a higher smoke point, and it also becomes shelf-stable, which is pretty good too. But you still get like a really good buttery flavor in things. And so I like to do my eggs in it in the morning. I like to use it in baking, off and on depending on the recipes. Anytime if I want to fry things and I have a lot on hand, I'll do some fried fish in it. I'll do like chicken fried steak. If I'm going to pan fry anything, so not deep fry, so deep fry being where it's like floating, like fully submerged, or pan fry being where there's like just some in it and you're just browning each side, I like to use clarified butter a lot. I don't know. I guess you could add regular butter to that. Do you guys have any clarified butter Stories?
No, no, I never used it, but it sounds like I might need to.
Yeah, you should try it. It's pretty phenomenal. And then since I get to go twice, Corey said it, my next one is mayo. And I like to use mayo on steaks and roasts and things I'm going to sear. And you're going to – I've said this for years. I did a test on it after I heard the rumor of the use of mayo. And mayo is just an emulsion, right? It's essentially like egg and oil in its very basic form. And once you add that on there, the proteinaceous properties in that emulsion plus the oil, if you coat a steak, lightly coat, we're not talking about like lather, you lightly coat a steak in that and season it and then sear it, you will get an incredible crust on it. And I did that with the roast I used for the Mississippi roast. I've done it with steaks. I've done it with tons of things, and it works. So now I don't eat mayo or anything else, right? I'm not a big mayo fan, but I keep mayo in the house just to sear things with.
I keep it in the house because we make a lot of our own dressings and dips. So we did tacos with the barbacoa this week. We made like the avocado sauce.
Mayo,
You know, mashed up avocado, honey, and lime juice and garlic.
Yeah, that sounds good.
And yeah.
Yeah, that does sound good. And you could use like a mayo as a form of kind of like a modified aioli. So if you want to get super fancy with aiolis before, mayo is a good substitute.
Yep. I like sauces.
Yeah, me too.
Dressing, so
it's an essential part of a meal.
Is it used in the Chick-fil-A sauce?
Mustard,
barbecue sauce, honey, and mayo. I think that's the Chick-fil-A sauce.
Which one?
And my
the Chick-fil-A sauce?
The Chick-fil-A sauce.
But okay. Be careful, the copyright folks are going to come after you.
Well, you never know, I guess. I'm sure there's some recipes floating around the internet. We'll
just
blame
it on them. It's just a guess, right, Corey?
Yeah.
I think I got that off of Meat Eater.
Oh, yeah.
Okay.
You know, Danielle did it.
Yeah, and she did the turkey nuggets with Chick-fil-A sauce, and then with the nuggets, you marinate them in pickle juice. So that's where they get that.
Oh, that's right. Yeah, the pickle brine.
And I did that, and it was... It was awesome.
All right, so we'll go back to you. I think we got time for each one more. That'll put us at 12 total.
Cool.
Back,
no, it won't. It'll put us at 11 total.
No, 12. We said 4. Right.
Which? What was your second one, Corey? Or your after lard tallow?
Wild game stock.
Ah. I'm trying to keep a list. Okay. All right. So you're up, number 11.
I just mentioned it with the mayo, with the avocado sauce, lemon or lime juice. I always keep that in the fridge. I use it a lot in sauces, or like when we're doing tacos, like we're frying up the meat, I'll drizzle it on that to finish it.
Ooh, that's good too. Yeah, I'm a big fan. I'll take a modified version of that, lemons or limes, and those accompany a multitude of things, just like you said, to like finish things. But like a little spritz on that. But also too, if I'm making, and I've done it with brines, I've done it with dry brines, I've done it with rubs, I've done it with just regular seasoning, I've done it with batters, but to zest the lime or zest the lemon, because there's more concentrated flavor in the peel of the fruit than there is the actual juice. So not to
make sure you wash.
Yeah.
make sure you wash it before you do that.
Yeah, and take the sticker off.
That too.
I use stickers all the time, dude.
I had a coworker eat like half of one of the stickers on an apple once. He was like eating it, and then he held it and was like leaning against the wall, and I looked over and I saw that like half the sticker was eaten. I was like, "Hey man, how's that sticker tasting?" And he's like, "What?" He's like, "Oh my gosh, I just ate it and I didn't even realize it." Oh man. Lemon lime juice too. Pretty useful for lots of things. Ceviches for cooking fish and things like that. Oh gosh, my mind just totally blanked.
I'd expand on that and say orange juice too. I've used orange juice a lot in like steak marinades to get that acid in there. But I mean, it's just the same thing. It's just a different, you know, different type of flavor.
I'm trying to think. Like carpaccio, that's what I was thinking. So like carpaccio, use lemon juice on. And so there's a lot of people starting to do it now. I think Ara's been doing it some, using like venison tenderloins or venison loins, also known as backstrap. And you have to freeze it first, like a hard freeze for several days to kind of kill all the little nasties inside of it that could be there. And then you thinly slice it super, super thin, like paper thin. And then use olive oil. And you use the lemon juice squeezed on it. And usually, like, there's cheese and capers and eggs sometimes, raw eggs sometimes in that. And you kind of, like, mix it together and eat it on like toast or crackers or bread or whatever. Maybe there's some like balsamic vinegar on it, like all kinds of stuff. But it's becoming a pretty good trend. We may have to do one of those up here pretty soon. But that's a good use of lemon juice I can think of off the top of my head.
Yeah. I've never made carpaccio, but I might, if I'm feeling adventurous, I might have to try it.
Yeah. I'm going to have to try, too. It's going to happen. I wonder how antelope carpaccio would be.
Got to find out.
Only one way to find out.
Yep. Stand by to stand by. All right, Colin, what do you got next?
Garlic powder. So,
ooh, garlic
you
powder.
You talked about salt. I thought someone was going to mention pepper, but salt and pepper are pretty basic. You know, that's kind of like the first ingredient that anybody ever uses. But when I use salt and pepper, I will most often use garlic powder along mm-hmm. with it. I don't feel bad about not using fresh garlic. I like using fresh garlic, but sometimes you want the kind of dryness of the seasonings together and not like a paste that you would get with fresh garlic that's minced. So I use it. I think it adds a nice extra garlicky flavor that couples well with salt and pepper. So I use it on pretty much anything, any kind of like hunk of meat that I'm going to put salt and pepper on. I'm going to put garlic powder on it also.
That's fair. Yeah. I use garlic powder a good amount too. It's probably one of the spices that we go through most. Because I do like to use it. And sometimes I'll even add fresh garlic in, and then I like to get the roasted garlic powder, which is, you know, it's got that little kind of like smoky roasted flavor to it in addition to just being dried. And so you get kind of like, you get the garlic flavor from the fresh garlic, and then you get almost this kind of sweet garlic flavor from the powder, the roasted garlic powder. And I really like that. I like it with fish, too, a lot.
Yeah. So.
But I think overall garlic's pretty important too, either powdered form or like raw form. Do you ever think you put too much garlic in something?
No,
never put too much garlic in.
I've met people who have thought that I put too much garlic in it, but no, that doesn't exist in my house.
So you'll notice that the majority of the recipes that I ever write is like 2 to 3 garlic cloves is what I like to use, unless it's like super, unless I intentionally want it super garlicky, because sometimes I think it does overpower a little bit. But I am a huge garlic fan. I do like it. I like, oh my gosh, just roasted garlic. Oh, it's one of my favorites. You just put it in the oven and just cook it. Oh, it's so
smear it on some bread or something.
Yep, just like that. I'll even do it if I'm doing stuff in the smoker. I have extra space on the grill grate. I'll buy like 6 heads of garlic and I'll just throw in there.
Oh,
just let them roast while I'm cooking whatever else. And then you get like smoky roasted garlic paste and it's just so delicious. And then what else was I thinking as far as garlic? I'm not a fan of the pre-mint stuff that's in like that weird oil.
I like the stuff that's so convenient.
It's convenient, but it's like, it's already rotting. I don't know. I just like to cut it myself. I won't go on a tirade.
And scoop it in there. Don't have to worry about getting my fingers all garlicky smelling.
I like that smell, though. Like,
yeah, but not when you're laying in bed at night and you wipe your nose and like, ah.
Wash your hands.
Well, if you're feeling
smells that just don't come out.
Yeah. So I think if you wash your hands with like lemon or lime juice, it helps cut through it.
Yeah.
I have another reason to have it in the pantry.
I have lemon scented dish soap that I use.
It's close enough.
Yeah. Man, I think we've covered a lot, so let's do our, because we're definitely much more over time than normal. I guess, whatever. I think we've covered a lot of really good things. I think you could run through these 12 things, and, like, if you had them on hand, you'd be pretty solid to cook a multitude of game dishes. At least to enhance it. It's like, these are pretty key ingredients as far as I think about it. So, you guys want to, let's do last thoughts. So, Colin, last thought.
No, I don't have any. I think I do have one then. Yeah. All of these ingredients are, some of them are pretty normal to have. I'd say some of them, like, clarified butter might not be one that everybody thinks to gather when they're going to the store for supplies, save like you're stocking in a new kitchen, a fresh kitchen. But all of them are good to have on hand. We talked about how many different combinations and uses of stuff. So all these things are, if we're going to put a list together of all these 12 ingredients, I think all of them would be worthwhile to have in a kitchen because you could do a lot with all of them. None of them just have one purpose. That's what I'm kind of like.
That's true. I think you could probably use them all at once and make something too.
Probably could.
Since I look at it.
Challenge.
Challenge accepted.
Just dump them in a bowl and see what happens.
Maybe not like that. Maybe a little more strategic.
Yeah.
Otherwise, you just end up with just a big, buttery, oily, juicy mess. Spicy.
Yeah.
But, all right, Corey, what do you got? Last thought.
Well, when I was thinking of these ingredients, I was thinking of stuff that a lot of people might not necessarily have, but it's easy to get and easy to keep.
Mm-hmm.
Like the chipotle peppers, they're cheap, they're in a can, they last forever. Just keep them on your pantry shelf and use them when you need them. The lard and stuff, I mean, it's good to have a local butcher that you can get that stuff from. But, you know, put it in the freezer. Keep for a while. I actually bought a gallon of beef tallow, grass-fed beef tallow off of Amazon, and I used that over several months. I just kept it in the fridge, and I used it. Took me like 4 or 5 months to use it all.
Wow.
The stock, I mean, once you braise something once and you just keep reusing it, keep it, you'll always have something on hand. And the lemon lime juice, you know, just grab one. They're a few bucks at the store. Keep it in the fridge. So stuff that you might not necessarily have now, but it's easy enough to get a hold of and keep and utilize in your cooking.
Yeah, I think that definitely rings true. You brought up a really good point of the fact that all these things are pretty readily available. Either you can make them yourselves or you can buy them at most grocers. You're going to carry them, which makes it pretty standard, pretty accessible. They're all shelf stable or freezer stable or fridge stable. And some of them you can drink without using it in a dish if you really wanted to, which is good. But I think outside of that, I think it's a pretty solid list of stuff. If anybody has anything that they think we missed or anything that we should add to our top 12, send us an email, whatscooking@harvestingnature.com. We'd love to hear from you about what ingredients you find key in your game cooking. And that can be anything, vegetables, starches, flowers, not like flour from your garden, but like a flour from like ground things.
F-L-O-U-R, flour.
Yeah. Yeah, either way, we'd love to hear from you, and thanks, everybody, for listening. As always, the show notes and links to all the recipes that we hinted and mentioned at and references will be in the show notes. And then, you know, keep an eye out for spices, for magazines, for cooking classes, for all those great things we're doing. And then, finally, don't forget about Hats for Reviews. So whatever podcast platform you're listening to, punch that 5-star button. Leave us a written review, and we'll read it on the air. You know, tell us what we're doing wrong, or maybe tell us what we're doing right. Thanks, everybody. Have a good night.
When you go out there and the fish are where you think they are, any one of these casts could be the bite. It's the most exciting fishing that I know right here at Hawk's Cay.
Oh, that's awesome.
Experience the best saltwater fishing the world has to offer. Don't miss Thursdays with Saltwater Experience, brought to you by Golden Boat Lifts, every Thursday night from 7 to 10 p.m. Eastern on Waypoint TV, the destination for outdoor entertainment.
Four in the morning.
Join me, Chef Jean-Paul Bourgeois, and the whole crew here at Duck Camp Dinners every Monday at 8 p.m. Eastern on Waypoint TV. Birds up in the-